You're joining Dr. John DeMartini on this week's episode of The DeMartini Show. If you wake up in the morning thinking about how you can use your time to make more of a difference every day, and you're driven to make progress in all the areas of your life, then you're in the right place right now. In this episode, Dr. DeMartini explains how to find opportunities in times of chaos. With the current global pandemic, many people have found themselves needing to innovate, or in some cases, completely reinvent themselves. So whether you need to adapt or whether you need to go back to the drawing board and start your business or career again, you're going to find this episode extremely valuable. Make sure you have your pen and paper ready to take notes. Enjoy.
So Dr. DeMartini, the first question I've got for you is, right now there are many of our clients that are in industries that has been affected with what has been happening and will take a while to come back again towards what they used to. How does one filter the environment and see opportunities that is congruent with our values currently?
Well, I wish I could be a prophet and tell you exactly what's going to happen at what day. I don't know. There's so much controversy on what they're going to do. And there's now, as you can see, there's revolts going on and people wanting to go back to work. So, don't know if we're ever going to be exactly the way it was. I think that's going to be unrealistic. I think there's been a change. The vastness of people that are gone online and the businesses that are gone online are most likely going to move forward. I think that's technologically, this has catalyzed a technological step up. So the old way may not be, holding on to the past is maybe not the wisest thing here. So anytime you compare your current reality to a fantasy of how it should be, how you wish it would be, how it used to be, how you would fantasize you'd like it to be, you're not going to appreciate your reality. And it's wiser to not compare your current reality to those fantasies, because that's depressive. Because you keep comparing what it is to what you wish it would be, and you're not present in what it is. The wisest thing to do is to sit down and go, what is going on? What's the facts? Get as objective as you can, and now work from there. And as those facts change, keep working from there, and ask yourself, how specifically is this situation where I'm in now, how can I use this to the greatest advantage? How can I use this most effectively? I don't know when I'm going to be standing in another ballroom speaking yet. Don't know. Meantime, I'm doing onlines. I've moved my things to the online world. And believe it or not, there's been advantages to that that are most likely going to be kept, even if I go back to the other way. We're going to probably incorporate the two together. So there's an adaptation there. Stress is the inability to adapt to a changing environment, or distress is. And we have the most inability to adapt when we're rigid with infatuations about how it should be, or wished it would be, or how it used to be, and resentments about how it is. So the more we resent something, the more we fear the gain of it, and the more we infatuate with something alternative to that, the more we fear the loss of it. Whenever we're in fear like that, we go into our amygdala, and our amygdala skews things and exaggerates the fantasy and the nightmare that we're in. And we then are not as rational, and we don't see opportunities because we're in our subcortical brain where we don't see opportunities. We don't see visions of possibilities, and we don't come up with strategic plans on how to take the current reality and use it to greatest advantage. So the wisest thing to do is to ask, what is the facts today? And take those facts today, be as objective as you can, and ask now, with these facts, how can I use these to our greatest advantage? Because I don't know if we're going to ever have exactly the way it was. Can't guarantee that. I actually doubt that it's going to be exactly the way it was. It's going to be different. And if you're not able to do that, you're not able to change manage, and you're holding on to rigid views, you're just adding to your own distress. It has nothing to do with what's going on out there. It's your attachment to fantasies and your detachment from current reality is it causes your problem, because that keeps you from coming up with creative solutions. The solutions to the so-called problem is always there, because there's never a crisis without a blessing. So the wisest thing that I know to do is to take the current reality and ask, how specifically can I use this current reality to my greatest advantage to fulfill the mission? If you lose sight of the mission of service that's equitable with other people, and you get focused on your narcissistic needs over them, all you're going to do is compound your problem. And if the other extreme, if you sacrifice you for them, again, another amygdala response, you're also going to perpetuate the problem. The only thing that's sustainable is some sort of fair exchange. So your objective is to go and figure out what are the needs today. It's interesting that some companies are booming right now. There was a little Chinese restaurant that was doing takeout service in Los Angeles when I was there at that hotel. And they had lines every 6 foot they allowed a person to go in line. They were busy all day long. They had never had that much business in their history. So some businesses are booming, some are declining. The ones that are meeting people's needs are booming. And the people's needs changed. If you can't congregate in a restaurant, takeout became possible. And then the people that did takeout and delivery, they end up booming because they met the needs. So I would encourage people to stop and look at what are the needs of the people you want to serve. And because if you meet those needs and you do it more effectively and efficiently than anybody else, you end up with a business. This forces you to become more effective and efficient at meeting people's needs and doing it in a way that is more efficient and inspiring and meeting those needs better than somebody else. So it forces you to be accountable. It forces you to be more proficient. It forces you to step up. It forces you to keep current with what's going on and not stagnate in the assumption that what was working is going to continue working, because it may not work in the past. What was working in the past, I mean, it may not work now or as effectively. So I don't think it's wise to, you know, just hold on to the fantasy that we're going to go back exactly the way it was, because I don't think that's going to happen. I think there's going to be some change to that. I know for myself, I'm sitting here now doing online. I'm doing them all day, most of the day. I'm doing my research, I'm doing my writing, and I'm doing podcasts and webinars and finding a how to adapt to that. It's actually been quite smooth. It hasn't been a major adaptation, really. So you have to basically ask yourself now, how do I serve? I have many of my facilitators and students now doing what they're doing in a new form. It's now an online course. It's now an online consulting. It's now an online transactions. And they're now finding people to deliver products, and they're finding out different ways of doing it, and they're getting creative. When they does go similar to what it was, maybe not the same, some things open up again. You will now have these new resources that you didn't have, which will then, like the slingshot effect, it'll be tension. And then when it releases, you'll have catalytic opportunities that you didn't have before. And the income that you think you lost, possibly, which is another illusion, because you just now put your genuine wealth into forms of relationship, creativity, new innovations, knowledge, online technology. You diversified temporarily your resources into new forms, which will then come back and bring you more income in the future. I've said for many decades that it's wise, those have been to my prophecy program, it's wise to make sure that you have a minimum of 3 to 6 months worth of liquid capital. And I know that's now hindsight for some people, but if you didn't have that, you're stressed because you don't have working capital unless you're going out there and really meet people's needs. So this will teach those people that have not managed money wisely to open up a higher value on wealth management, so they're not put in that situation again. People get sloppy. They live beyond their means. They don't have a savings. They don't have any cushion. They don't have anything else. And they don't have any investments. And they don't have passive income. And they're foolish with money. And as a result of it, this forces them to grow up and not be immediate gratifying consumables, depreciating, living beyond their means, and stressing themselves unnecessarily. So that's one of the benefits you're going to get. And the benefit of that long term, if you master that, when you manage money wisely, you receive more of your money to manage. So this slingshot effect, this temporary setback, is going to actually be a greatest catalyst. And what you think is Corona 19, you're going to call St. Corona in the future. You're going to go, thank God this occurred, or at least thank the virus for this occurring. So or Wuhan, the Chinese Wuhan labs or whatever. The reality is there is opportunity right now, but you got to get grounded in reality, because the second you compare it to what it should be, what it ought to be, the most depressed people I see in my breakthrough experience are the people that are comparing their current reality to delusions. Things about the past, the way it should have been or would have been, could have been, had have been, why isn't it this way, or the future fantasy that they have that's not grounded. We are designed to suffer when we're pursuing that which is unobtainable and trying to avoid that which is unavoidable. We're designed to, as a feedback, to wake us up to set real objectives and get grounded and start from reality. If you don't know where you are, you don't know where you want to go, and you don't have a strategy, you're likely to be frustrated. So look at where you are right now. Get clear about what the mission is. If you don't know what your mission is, it's time to get clear about it. That's one of the reasons I teach the Breakthrough Experience, one of the reasons I do all the programs I do, because people that are clear about their mission then ask, how is my current reality helping me fulfill that? And then they see things on the way. They don't see things in the way. So this is not a challenge except to people who are perceiving it as a challenge. There's just as many opportunities if you take the time to ask, how is what's happening right now helping me get what I want to get?
And then Dr. DeMartini, can you please explain what role does our values play in seeing opportunities in our environment?
Well, every human being has a unique set of priorities or set of values that they're living by. And that's because of their unique vantage points and experiences and judgments that they've created voids with that determine these values. So no two people have the same set of values. If you meet anybody, they may say things that are somewhat common. They may all like sushi or something, but it may be different sushi. They may all like a certain religion or something, but there are different views inside that. It's called the law of similars and differences. So no two people have exactly the same set of values. The Pauli exclusion principle, which is a principle in physics, says that no two quantum particles that are fermions can ever occupy the same space and time and have the same quantum numbers. Well, the same thing with human values, because values are quantifiable fermionic states. So anytime we have a value system that's unique, we see life differently and filter things. And the way our brain is set up, the things that are highest on our values, we tend to filter out of our reality. We have a pulvinar nuclei in our thalamus, which is a subcortical region in the diencephalon, that basically filters and gates out information, because we'd be overwhelmed by infinity. All the data that's coming in would be overwhelming. We have to filter that out based on what we value. So a mother walking in a mall that's highest values of children, she's going to spot children's clothes and health items and children's entertainment items and things of this nature, educational items, where a husband who's maybe an entrepreneur who's holding hands with her in a mall will not see any of that stuff. He'll see business and computers and suits and whatever he thinks is going to give him an advantage. So we filter our reality and then and look for things that give us more advantage and disadvantage to fulfill what we're trying to do according to our highest values. Those values are also being projected onto the world, filtering the world. And since no two people have the same values, no two people see the same worlds. Even in Scientific American in September edition last year, they talked about everybody has their own hallucination of what's going on out there. And we're responsible for our own reality. Nobody else is creating it except us. Now, our perception, decisions, and actions are what we have control over, and that's being filtered by our values. So our values determine what we perceive, what we decide, because we're looking for whatever gives us the greatest advantage or disadvantage, and the actions that we prioritize that we take. And the perception, decisions, and actions determines a human's destiny. You tell me what your perception, decisions, and actions are, tell me what you value, and I'm going to tell you where you're headed. I have a high value on teaching. My life points in the direction of teaching. So, yeah, your values are dictating everything. And they're also dictating what you perceive to be supportive or challenging to yourself. The way the brain is set up in the subcortical areas of the brain, the inner brain segments, the inner nuclei, as they call them, they react just like an animal. They're sometimes called the more animal brain. And they've been given different names by Restock and McLean. They gave them names like reptilian brain and mammalian brain and pre-amphibian brain. They gave those names because those areas of the brain are more highly developed. It's not that these other animals don't have all the areas of the brain. They just have more developed in that area. So they've been associated with that. So what's interesting is that when we go into a distress mode and we perceive things interfering with our values, Or we go into a excess mode where we think elation is putting our values. The second we do, we go out of our rational mind, we go down into our amygdala, and we go into distorting what is real. We distort the pain of something and exaggerate it, and we distort the pleasure of something and exaggerate that. And if we have a fantasy, we'll distort the fantasy, which will then distort the nightmare we're in, because we're comparing our current reality to that fantasy. So our values are dictating this. And that's why if we don't live by highest values and we don't link whatever we do by our highest values, we create our own delusions and sufferings. It's nothing to do with the world outside us. William James, the modern father of modern psychology, 1895 or so, said that the greatest discovery of his generation was that human beings can alter their lives by altering their perceptions, decisions, and attitudes and actions in life. And so we have the capacity. And most of us here might remember this. I don't know. Maybe you haven't, but very probably you've had some situation where you're ranting and going on some emotionally about something. And you thought, man, I'm so frustrated and angry and everything else. And all of a sudden somebody knocks on a door and a doorbell and some friend comes to the door and you stop your mode. And all of a sudden, oh, hi, how's it going? And you just put that behind you, as you will. So you have the capacity at any one time to change exactly your state. Totally up to you. And decide to change your perceptions and what you focus on, et cetera, based on what you value. So if you see things, whatever you perceive, that's not matching the fantasy, and therefore your feeling is depressing and challenging, and you've accentuated it because you've accentuated the fantasy of how it used to be, how good, and how it's going to be, how fantasized, you're gonna make it more difficult for yourself. But if you ask whatever's going on, how specifically is it helping you fulfill your highest value? What is your mission, your inspiration, where you gain meaning and where you gain purpose in life, and you find meaning in it? It's like Viktor Frankl in the concentration camps. You know, when everybody else was dying out and blaming things and comparing their situation of not having food and being tortured compared to the fantasy world they once had, or the fantasy that they're going to have, that they're going to get out and be free and all that. The ones that had those fantasies died. They didn't have any resilience, no adaptation. He ended up taking it and asking himself, just like the movie Shine, how specifically can I use this now? So he started making comedy out of it. He started using it as an acting time. He started turning it into opportunities that the other people couldn't do. They were sitting there comparing their current reality to fantasies of the past or future. Unless you're present and current and taking what's happening in reality and using it to your greatest advantage, you're missing out on your potential in life. You won't get your peak potential living in past and futures if they're not balanced, if they're distorted. And that's the problem with the amygdala. The amygdala is designed as a survival mechanism to distort reality and create overgeneralizations and distortions. I've had people in the breakthrough experience on many occasions, week after week, this last weekend too, where they've taken something and made something all good that they once had, and now they've lost it, and now they're depressed. So they've exaggerated this, which then exaggerates how bad their life was. So if I go in there and take this thing and I show them the downsides of the way it was and show them the upsides of the way it is and balance it out, they're fine. They're centered. And their creative executive center comes online, and all of a sudden they see things on the way, not in the way. There's studies done where when people actually are doing something that's truly inspiring to them, they don't see challenge, they see feedback. Failure is an amygdala response. Feedback is an executive center response. So people that see whatever happens to them as feedback, if you get cocky and you feel you're elated about the opportunities and you feel proud of what you're doing, that depurposes you and lowers your priority list. If all of a sudden you feel like you're down and you feel like you're feared, that repurpose you and put you back on your purpose list, your highest priority list. Those are two mechanisms to get you centered, to not exaggerate, minimize yourself. And the same mechanisms are going on in your psychology when you're imagining these fantasies and feeling now nightmares. All of those are just delusions that you're choosing to make. It has nothing to do with the world outside you. It has everything to do with your decision of how you perceive it. Take command of your decision and ask yourself, and extract meaning out of it. Extracting the mean, if you have a stock market that goes up and down, it averages with all the ups and downs a mean. Well, turn that upright. If you're elated or depressed, that's the up and down of the market. If you can find the upside when it's up and find the downside, the negatives in the up, and you can find the ups in the down, and you can find the mean in it, you extract meaning out of your experience. That's what extracting meaning is. It's found the golden mean that Aristotle mentioned. And if a person can do that, they master their life. In the breakthrough experience, I'm teaching people that. So they can be resilient, so they can be focused, so they can be prioritized, so they can be empowered people with a purpose in life. It has nothing to do with the world on the outside. Everything to do with what we decide to do with it. I know I'm harping on that, but it's just, because I keep people want to be victims of history. One thing you want to remember, the masses, and I say the masses are people, and all that includes me in moments. The masses are people who are living in the extrinsic world. And the masters are the people that live on the intrinsic world. What does that mean? The ones that are masses, they basically blame things on the outside and look for solutions on the outside. They're externally oriented because they'll blame the virus and then they'll look for the hero doctor, the vaccine or something. But the master is the one that goes, okay, if only 2% of the people are getting dying from this thing and really getting sick from this thing, that means there must not be the virus. It must be something to do with our immunity and something to do with our own power inside. And they're the ones that go inside and maximize their full potential and make sure that they're living by eustress, not distress, making sure they're wisely eating and using that as a stimulus to live wisely. And the wise individuals, the masters of life, they don't live extrinsically, you know, blaming this and looking for a major solution outside. It's not external oriented. The masses do that. They blame the devil and they look for a savior. They blame this, the hell, and they think about heaven. They live in a polarized fantasy world instead of get grounded and face the hero and villain out there is actually them. When you can embrace your hero and villain, you've mastered your life. But as long as you're looking externally, that it's all out there, that my problems are all out there and my solutions are out there, you're going to end up exaggerating the problem and then paying money for solutions that aren't really the solutions. It's all about you mastering yourself. And that's the difference. And we have moments of mastery and have moments of illusion many times. But the moments of mastery is what catalyzes evolution. And the moments of the illusion is what keeps us in revolution, keeps us stuck in a revolving door, our hamster wheel. And it's because we just keep running the story that this stuff is out there, the cause. And all that energy being victim of history and running that story is absolutely the most inefficient use of your energy. Solution orientation and bringing your full self meaning and getting back into inspiration and using reality to get you forward is the thing that it works.
And Dr. DiMartini, you mentioned a bit about voids. So can you please explain what voids are and how do we use that to validate our values?
Okay, well, let's say that you grew up where your father or mother left at a very young age. Your mother died when you were six or so. And you then were taken on by your father and taken on by his sister and maybe your grandmother. And they started taking out the mother's role. They took it on. And you stepped up and took on a lot more accountability because you had to. Your dad took on a little bit more feminine roles or mother's roles or whatever. And your grandmother stepped in. But you end up having, you know, emotional irritations because you were infatuated with your mother and dependent on her. And as a result of it, this now becomes a nightmare because you lost that which you infatuated with, that you depended on. Anything you depend on and infatuate with, you're going to feel the loss of. And if it leaves, you're going to feel grief. Now, grief has nothing to do with anything other than your attachment to that individual that you lost. Because if you resented somebody and they leave, you don't feel grief. You feel relief. So it's your perception that leads to your grief. Now, let's say that your parents don't know the DeMartini method and haven't been to the breakthrough experience. And so they see you're distraught by mommy's leaving. And they feel guilty that they can't do anything about it. So they take you to shrink. And the shrink then says, well, the reason you're screwed up is because your mommy left you and you're an abandoned child. And here's the stats. And so you now get programmed this bullshit that's the reason why your problem is there. It's all externally happened. There's nothing you can do about it. Nothing to do with you. You're an innocent little child, little innocent victim. And it had something to do with that event. Well, you just fucked up your life there. You just basically gave this power away and blame this situation for how you feel. And it has nothing to do with that situation. But let's say that somebody comes along like myself and says, okay, at the moment your mommy died, who became taking on all the roles of mommy? What did you miss about mommy, first of all? Who took on the roles? And then we identify quantitatively everybody that took on all the roles. And so nothing was not accounted for. You took on mom, grandma took some, dad took on, sister took something on, your teacher at school took some of it on. And then you realize, oh, I didn't miss anything. There was no void there. It was in another form. But I still fantasize my mommy was a better form. So then I come along and I go, what would have been the drawback if your mommy had done it? What were the drawbacks when your mommy did it? Oh yeah, she tried to control me. I couldn't do this. And you find the drawbacks of mommy. Now, what's the benefit to these new people taking it on? Once the benefits of the new people taken on and the drawbacks of the old mama, the fantasy that you had about your mama is brought back and got grounded in reality, because you realize that there's benefits and drawbacks to all those. Once you end up doing that, it's level. And all of a sudden the entire story, the illusion that there's a void, that there's something missing is gone. I didn't miss a mom. I had a transforming mom. And then when I grew up and moved out of the house, I had another form of a mom. And all my life, I've had different players playing in a matrix of moms, and nothing's ever been missing. The individual that realizes that nothing's ever missing is a liberated individual that's free to dance through life. But the individual that's basically, here's what it's supposed to look like, it's not there. I'm now holding on to my past with a fantasy instead of facing my current reality and looking at the magnificence of the current reality. I'm now going in there and I'm now thinking, oh, I miss a mom. I missed out and I'm screwed up. And my therapist really got me thinking, well, that's the reason I've got all these problems in my life. I would stay away from people that teach you things like that because they're ignorant. They don't know how life works. It's a magnificent transformation going on all the time. So if you all of a sudden do that and you grow up throughout your life, oh, I miss mom. I have a void of mom. Now what you're going to do, you're going to end up probably finding some guy to have a baby with. And you're now going to smother your child because, oh my God, I would never want to leave my kids. And everything you try to avoid, you run into, and everything you seek the fantasy of, you attract things to break that fantasy. So then you try to do it. And then all of a sudden, 20 years later, 30 years later, you realize, oh my God, I'm now in a relationship that's unfulfilling and I have to divorce. And now I have to have custody fights and my husband gets the kids. And now I've abandoned my kids. And then you realize that you're here to, that's all designed to help you make sure you love your mom and realize the form that's there, not sit there and hold on to the fantasies. Nature won't let you escape what you've been deluded about. It's going to force you to face your stuff. So that was an artificial void based on not knowing how to ask the right questions to see it and left you with a judgment that was stored in your subconscious mind that's now impacting your life, whether you see it or not. And your subconscious mind stores all lopsided perceptions like that. Anything that you saw, you're conscious of the upsides and unconscious of the downsides, or anything you're conscious of the downsides and unconscious of the upsides to, is going to be stored in there. And it's going to create a void. Why? Because if you infatuate with something, you're too humble to admit what you see in them is inside you. You think it's external that you're infatuated with, and you're disowning that part in you. And that's a void. And if you're too proud and looking down on somebody and resenting somebody, you're too proud to admit what you see in them is inside you. And that's a void. And those voids want to be fulfilled until you own all those parts and realize nothing's missing in you. And those determine your values. And your highest value is the most effective and efficient pathway to neutralize that, because it's the one that gives you the most objectivity, which allows you not to judge, allows you to see things more neutral, where you don't fear the loss of it or fear the gain of it. And so you transcend the illusions of philias and phobias, seekings and avoidings, which are the impulses and instincts of the amygdala and lower animal mind. You liberate yourself with moksha and liberation and satori and nirvana, or you want to call it, because you have the capacity to transcend those conscious blocks. And when you do, you have your highest value is one of the most significant things. It's the accessing gateway to the transcendental awareness where you see things neither good nor evil. And so you don't have the fear of loss of that, which is good, and fear of gain of that, which is evil, because the entire moral construct that you're hypocritically trapped in is an illusion. Because if you try to get a one-sided magnet, try to get rid of the other side of the magnet, it's futile. The same thing with these cockamamie moral constructs that ignorant people impose on people is an exploitation of people that are living in that animal behavior, trap people in these things, which we call limited beliefs. I'm just warming up now.
It sounds like that you're just getting warmed up. And Dr. DeMartini, what do we do, you know, especially during these times, we're going to get presented with a lot of opportunities in terms of business and changing in business, but these opportunities is not congruent with our values as such. How do you think we are, or how should we look at that?
Well, it depends on the opportunity. I had a client this week, well, it's been over the last 2 weeks, really. If they have a great opportunity to make quite a bit of money, but it's doing something that could jeopardize their brand in the future. So they asked me, what do you think? Because it's really a substantial bit of money. They want to be involved in an advertisement, a national advertisement thing, and they're it's significance, large sums of money. And I said, well, let's take a look. And when at first they were enamored and blinded by the sum of money, because right now they could use the sum of money. But then I said, well, I want to, if you right now, here, write all the benefits down, have them write all the benefits down. And then I said, now we need to come up with the same amount of drawbacks, because life doesn't have one-sidedness. So what are the drawbacks? When we actually started seeing the drawbacks, they realized that their infatuation with the money blinded them for what the consequences of who they were going to business with. So then that when they started to see some of the downsides, they started doing further research on the internet, and they found out that two of the people in the organization are criminals that are con people. And they caught that and they go, I can't believe I would have missed that and gone in this system and then been associated with it and probably create a fiasco and long-term would have undermined my brand. Because these individuals over here had been conning people, and here's the next con that they're doing. They're taking advantage of people right now with a con. And they didn't even have in the contract originally that they were guaranteed to pay up front. So they were about to be conned, and it was pretty interesting. So that one exercise of finding out what are all the benefits that you see, and then what's the downsides. If you see way more benefits and drawbacks, you're blinded by some infatuation. Most everybody here has had a situation where they've run into a man or a woman, or a woman, or a man, or whatever we call it today, because it could be anything in between. And you're in a relationship and you're infatuated with them, and you don't see the downsides at first. You get a fatal attraction, kind of like Michael Douglas and Glenn Close. And at first you're blind, and then you get in, and then you find out you've just destroyed your house, your marriage, and everything else over this crazy person. So you didn't see it because you didn't look. You allowed your amygdala to skew things, to exaggerate the positives, to blind you to the negatives, to have a confirmation bias on the positives, a disconfirmation bias on the negatives, to have a false positive on the positives and a false negative on the negatives, and skew it out of proportion. And then you're blind yourself, and then you make a decision. That's why making decisions out of the amygdala is almost guaranteed to get you smacked. But making decisions out of seeing both sides objectively makes you aware and have foresight. So if you get an opportunity, the first thing to do is go and balance it, because the second you balance it, it gets linked to your highest value, because your highest value is where everything is objective. So go and link it and balance it first. When you do, you'll discover something. You'll discover that anything that you oversighted, that was the downside, you became aware of, and you went, oh shit, at least. And then you can look at that and you go, if I can handle all those downsides and I'm prepared for that and I can mitigate those and I can use those to my advantage, then I can move forward on the project. I'm fully aware of what I'm about to get into. The thing that makes us different than the animals is that we have the ability to extract meaning, bring things back into the mean, and to be able to have foresight, and to have, the animals have what they call the telenomics. They learn by trial and error, tinkering with things. Even Darwinian evolution has got problems. It's not a complete theory by any means. In fact, it's got lots of flaws in it, because it makes you assume that an animal survives and the one that survives continues and the one that doesn't. But they've shown in Chernobyl, for instance, recently, they found out that animals and plants around the nuclear power plant, within three generations, they had adaptations, and now they're thriving and they're actually doing more thriving compared to the other animals and plants that didn't get all that radiation. And they figured out that it's actually, there's a hormetic system that the challenge has actually upgraded them and they're now more resilient. And there's an evolutionary process there that makes them more efficient for surviving in the future. So they now realize, oh, wait a minute, that couldn't possibly be Darwinian evolution because Darwinian evolution would have to take multiple generations to get that done. This happened in less than three generations. So now they know that there's epigenetic responses and there's some sort of homeostatic mechanism, a teleological foresight mechanism, partly sitting there. Now, in the process of doing it, humans really have that accentuated. It's not incipient. It's really accentuated. And we have the capacity to look with our mind, not imagination future, but actually go into our mind and see all the reactions and possible things that could occur and plan through those and mitigate anything that we think is going to be a hindrance to our life and come up with a strategy. And people who are strategically planning are the ones that accomplish the greatest achievements. You can't make it to the Mars with Elon Musk SpaceX unless you're doing planning. You can't make and build a massive structure without planning. You can't accomplish anything of magnitude without planning. And it's the people that have foresight. Alec McKinsey and the Time Trap show that the people at the forefront, the people that are leaders, the people that are at the things are functioning from their executive center and spending more of their time in vision and planning than the people who are just reacting. And the majority of people are just, they don't go anywhere in life because they just keep redundantly doing the same things, expecting different results and having to have cataclysmic change. In evolutionary theory, we have what they call gradual hypothesis and cataclysmic hypothesis. And cataclysmic hypothesis, people that live by their lower values, rigidly polarize things, get attached to things and detached from things, infatuate, resent, have high emotional states, and then fear the loss of one and fear the gain of the other. And then it takes a cataclysm to finally get them to change. That's called hitting bottom in addiction. And the people that have gradual changes are constantly doing micro changes, as Jim Collins says. That's the tinkering that keeps adapting and making micro changes to keep adapting. Right now, this is the perfect time to be doing micro changes and actually doing it. Because if you're holding on to the past and fantasies or future fantasies and not being grounded right now, you're going to end up seeing this as a cataclysm. It's not a cataclysm. It's an opportunity.
And Dr. DeMartini, that's beautiful. Leads me into the next question. Let's say we're busy with the planning and we find out the market that we are interested in going into is a bit saturated. For example, coaching and online teaching, and everybody's getting into it now because that's where the opportunity is. You know, how do we get around that?
Well, this is what differentiates people who are serious versus somebody who's just stepping in there and thinking, oh, I better grab this. The people who are going to be doing well in any field are the people who have an extremely high value on doing it and mastering it and doing it in a way that's fair to make a difference in people's lives. So if you sincerely find a niche that you're truly most inspired by, that you know is a need out there, and you target that, you'll be the one that rides and thrives. Just because of thousands of people are doing coaching doesn't mean that everybody's going to do well. The people who are going to do well, the ones that are going to deliver the service, and they're going to do it more effectively. So if you don't even believe that you can do it effectively, it's because you're comparing yourself to others instead of comparing your daily actions to your own highest values and what the needs of the highest values of your clients are. If you focus on the highest values of yourself and the highest values of your clients and stick to those, you will be the one that succeeds in that endeavor. You know, if you're trying to be second at being Elvis, you're not going to be first at being you. When I got asked on the Vogue magazine interview one time, I had 17 questions that they asked me. It was a lovely young girl that was asking me these questions. And I think she was probably late 20s or something. It's a bit naive, I think. But she said, well, Dr. DeMartini, the very last question says, if there's anybody in the world that you could be, who would you want to be? And I looked at her and I thought, what a weird question. And I said, well, ma'am, I have no desire to be anybody but me. Why would I want to be anybody but me? And she goes, really? And I go, oh, people usually say, I want to be the Kardashians or I want to be this. Or, why would I want to be somebody other than me? Because I can be my magnificent me, but I can't be second at being somebody else. And the thing is, and I was in Tennessee, Nashville, Tennessee, and I was getting ready to do a breakthrough experience there. And the lady that was hosting me had a husband who was a PhD in psychology, very sharp guy. And He got his PhD. I asked him what his PhD was on. He said it was on William James. I said, so you did a PhD on William James? Yeah, he said, I took a tiny portion of William James' life and his teachings, and I created my PhD around that one niche, that one little topic. I said, so you basically spent additional 4 years studying one man's tiny portion of one man's life. He goes, yes. Isn't it interesting? You got a PhD and people will look up to you with a PhD because you studied a tiny portion of one man's life. And yet people have a whole life that may not have been studied, but they have a whole life. And they somehow think that you're more ingenious because you have a PhD than they do in their life. It's kind of irrational. We all have multiple PhDs in different aspects of our life. But if we compare what we're wanting to learn with somebody else's values and then not honoring what we know, we're going to think ourselves as idiots compared to them. As Einstein said, a cat, right, that expects to swim like a fish is going to beat itself up. And a fish expects to climb like a cat is going to beat itself up. But a cat honoring its cathood is going to do quite great in the cat industry. So you got to find the industry that's truly inspiring to you that you can't wait to do. Don't try to go down a path of coaching on something you don't spontaneously love doing on a daily basis. So you won't have the resilience and adaptability because it won't be your highest value. And the second you do, you'll be highly volatile with the markets and want to blame things and want to give excuses. And you'll procrastinate, hesitate, and frustrate on those areas. If you're going to go into coaching and everything else, then find the niche that you can't wait to get up in the morning and do that people can't wait to get. And you got to care enough about the people to find out what their needs are to meet those needs. If you don't do that, you're not going to thrive in that business. And yes, there is a lot of business out there right now. And almost everybody, no matter what the situation, has something that they have a need in. There's always a new need. If Bezos added 100,000 people to his business, Amazon, right now, during the coronavirus, he obviously is meeting people's needs. He hired 100,000 people. That's the biggest hiring spree ever had. So why is it that this man is thriving during this? Is because of foresight and because everybody needs right now online distribution, online purchases, online deliveries, online this. So here's a guy that was at the cutting edge doing it. So what would happen if you came up with online coaching, online this, and online deliveries, and who knows? But if you meet people's needs and you help them solve the problems, they'll be there. I don't know. I think we have 5,000 something, 500 people or something on this thing today. If they're on there, they must be meeting some sort of need. Something I'm saying must be a value, or they wouldn't want to take up their hour of their time to come on this line. So if I have the responsibility to give you something of value. If I don't do it, you're not going to come back to me. You're going to go on to somebody else. And my job, my accountability, is to keep studying and keep learning and keep growing and keep delivering some sort of value. If I'm going to be a coach or teacher, that's my responsibility. You got to own that responsibility and you got to be the master of it. You got to go out there and put more into it than the guy next door. And if you do that, by the way, every relationship you have, whether it be a spouse, a kid, believe it or not, even your kids will leave you, a spouse, a kid, a client or whatever, they're only going to stay with you. Your own security has nothing to do with them. Your security has everything with you meeting their needs. That's it. Now, if you can do that more effectively than somebody else, you get the business. There's no escape from that. There's no shortcuts. There's just reality. So go and become the greatest at what you do. Ask yourself, as Colin said, what is it that I can be the greatest at? What is it that I would love to be the greatest at? What is it that I'm actually demonstrating the evidence that I'm moving towards that greatest at? And what can I do that will serve people with that greatest at?
Thanks for that, Dr. DeMartini. And the next one is, what is the signs if we know that we all, or what are the signs we can look out for if you are subordinating to somebody else's values or injecting somebody else's values into our lives?
Just like I on the breakthrough experience this weekend, we got to see it live. One of the signs that you've injected a value is you'll hear yourself inside your head or externally verbalized. You say, I really should be doing this. I'm supposed to be doing this, but I don't seem to be doing it. I don't know why, but I just can't stay focused. I'm just not disciplined. I know I ought to be doing more of this, but I don't do it. I need to do this, but I just don't seem to get around to doing it. I got to do this. I got to change this. Got to, have to, must, need to, should, ought to, supposed to, are imperative languages that are injected values to people you subordinate to. And whenever you hear that, you hear this in religious people that are subordinating to dogma and irrational crap that's being taught them. You see this in political people about idealism. Anybody that's stuck in moral constructs are going to be trapped in it. So that's a sign of trying to fit in to a mother, father, preacher, teacher, or some social group at some scale of society, and not actually digging inside and finding out what you're inspired to do. I'm going to make a statement here that's probably maybe shock some of you. I don't know. There are no rules out there other than the universal laws. There's just rules that people come up with to protect themselves from their own fears. Now think about this. If I go to my, there's a daughter, and let's say that daughter comes to me and says, Daddy, I got on the honor roll this month, and I've got to be prom queen, and I got to be voted as the student body president, and I just found out I got a scholarship to Harvard, and I've been saving my money like you taught me, and I've now saved a certain amount of money, and I want to pay for my own school, and with a scholarship, I'm going to earn it my way. And by the way, I'm dating the most popular boy, and he looks just like you, Daddy. And all of a sudden she says things that really support your values. And Daddy, is there any way I can borrow the car tonight? When things support your values, you lax the rules. And you go, sure, I'm proud of you. By the way, anytime a parent's proud of a child, it's nothing to do with the child's action, because pride is never what they do. Pride is what you think you did that led to them doing it. So what happens is, if you're proud of your child, it means that you're basically taking credit for their action, and it matches your values, and you're actually thinking you made it happen, which is a delusion. So pride is automatically going to set you up for an illusion. They're going to end up humbling you. Then you're going to blame yourself for that same opposite behavior. But what happens if your daughter comes to you and says, Daddy, I'm pregnant. And I don't know who the father was, because I went to a gangbang and I took on 20 men. And I don't know what it is. And by the time we were doing drugs, and when I bought the drugs, I stole your credit card, and the police are looking for your credit card. And they may come and take you. I don't know. They may blame you because I'm still underage. And anyway, when I did it, I stored it at the house. And I think they're on the way to the house. They may be searching the house. She does a bunch of stuff. And by the way, I dropped out of school, and I owe a bunch of people money, and they're drug dealers. And I think they're going to come and try to get it and steal from the house. And Daddy, can I borrow the car to leave the country? Well, now all of a sudden, if his values is challenged, he's going to tax those rules and put all the rigid autocratic behaviors in there. Because whenever we end up with our values really challenged, we get autocratic. When our values are really supported, we lax the rules. When our values are really challenged, we tax the rules. Society has a set of rules. And whoever has power in society sets them. And whoever has the least power in society dutifully follows them. And anybody down below who tries to interfere with the rules above is going to be squashed with automatic autocratic behaviors. Now, the fear of what's going to happen to that makes us submit and subordinate. In the process of doing it, we want to fit in like the sheep, because we're afraid to stand up against all the authority. And people that really like conspiracy theories, that like to think and exaggerate authority and minimize their power, are vulnerable to this. So the second you actually go in there and you realize that you're subordinating to that, you're going to go, I should be doing this. I need to be doing this. I got to be doing this, because otherwise I'm going to be rejected, or I'm going to have consequences. But really, whoever has the power sets the rules. And if you empower yourself, you get to set them. And there's no boundaries on what those are. And there's no ultimate rules. You know, in some countries, there are in South Africa, you have countries where that the president had 9 wives. In other countries, you go to prison for that. It's called bigamy or polygamy. So you're not allowed to do it. So one place it's considered power and influence, and you got a leader that way. Here you don't. And in some countries you're allowed to do certain things, other countries you're not. So the rules are not necessarily rules of the universe unless they're universal laws. Those are the only ones that we all submit to. That's why I teach those in my breakthrough programs and all my programs. I want you to know what are actual laws that nobody violates, instead of all subordination to all the little rules that just happen to be there. And as a result of that, we end up subordinating because we don't actually confront things. Albert Einstein, when he was about 18, 19 years old, was in a class with Philip Leonard, who was a professor who was a Nobel Prize winner at the time and was the authority. He had done the photoelectric effect, and he was the authority in the world. And Einstein found a flaw in his work and pointed it out in the class, in front of the whole class, which was absolutely not accepted at that time because there were autocrats. This is in Germany, and you just didn't do it. It was autocratic. And so he was chastised for that by the teacher, and the teacher spent many years trying to destroy Albert Einstein, and he didn't get one of his Nobel Prizes because of it. And he even was friends with Hitler, and he basically went after and tried to get Hitler to assassinate Einstein. It's a very fascinating story. But Einstein stood up, and he had the courage to stand up against the authority and say, wait a minute now, I'm dedicated to truth. What you're saying is flawed. I'm going to stand. If you want to kill me, eventually it's going to be found out, and you're going to look foolish because you killed the person that had the true answer. So go ahead. And he says, and if for some reason God's laws don't match the one I found, I feel sorry for God. That's how confident he was, because he really did his homework on it. The mathematics made sense. Turned out that he was accurate. He later got his Nobel Prize for it. But it was suppressed for many years, and because of one guy. But the question is, do you have the courage to stand out? Do you have the courage to be an unborrowed visionary? Do you have the courage to get ridiculed, violently opposed, and chastised by the herd by coming up with something new? And if you do, you're going to stand out. You're going to be the one that's going to get the corner of the market, because eventually the new paradigm is born. If you're not being crucified, you're probably not on purpose. And as Emerson said, to be great is to be misunderstood. So you got to give yourself a question. What's really the model I want to live my life by? You can create the model of your life how you want it. There's no rules out there saying you have to do this or have to do that, except the ones you buy into. You subordinate to them, you're stuck in the rules that you did. Otherwise, you can create them. But just know that if you don't have the power to override those that have power, you're probably going to deal with resistance. But that's part of the game. So if you have something you're certain about and you want to get it out there, endure the resistance. The average leader that made a difference in the world, the polymath that did it, was usually 30 to 60 years of enduring that. And when they came out ahead, they changed history. You decide where you want to play in the game. You want to be part of a culture that's traditional and stagnant and keep the old way? Or do you want to be part of the solution for the future? It's up to you.
Thanks for that, Dr. DeMartini. And we come to our last question. Can you please explain the role that gratitude plays in our lives to see and act on opportunities that is in the marketplace and not to be swayed by other people's opinions?
Well, the majority of people are not going to live by their executive center. Not everybody's a Nobel Prize winner. Not everybody's the spiritual leader of the planet. Not everybody gives himself permission. I love what Abraham Maslow did. He had a group of 20 people in a room one time, and he said, okay, who here has plans to be the next president? Who's going to be the next spiritual leader? Who's going to be the next innovator in business? Who's going to be the next inventor? Who's going to be the next leader in sports? And was trying to get them to ask the questions instead of just assuming, well, that's for somebody else. Why not me? So when he started doing that, people started digging inside themselves and going, what is really the reason why I wouldn't give myself permission to do it? Why am I? I think it's Marianne Williams said, you know, are we here to shine or shrink? And most people shrink. So when they do, they're not going to be grateful for their life as much, because they basically, anytime you're not living by your highest values and walking your own unique path to make the great difference, because we all want to make a difference. We can't make a difference fitting in. If we don't take that path, we are automatically designed to beat ourselves up. One thing I'm certain about is that you will never escape criticism. And if you avoid it on the outside, you're going to live with it on the inside. And I'd rather have the whole world against me than my own soul. Because the criticism you have inside yourself is way more affecting you than the ones on the outside. That circulates the most has the least value. I remember working with a lady in Calgary, Canada, who'd spent 4 years in a basement. 4 years in a basement, a very large, obese, overeating woman living in a basement, trying to protect herself from ridicule and criticism. So she refused to go out. And so the individuals there at the house asked me to come in and try to work with her. It wasn't the most beautiful setting. It wasn't the most fragrant location to do work. But I went down there and I worked with her, and I finally got a message across to her. And I had to go through and help her realize that, go to a moment when she was criticized, and I showed her where she was praised, and that was an eye-opener to her. And then I showed her when every time she's been criticized, if she tried to avoid it, she ended up doing it to herself. So now she's living with total internal self-depreciation, sitting in there, hiding away from people for fear of criticism. You're not going to avoid criticism. You might as well go and criticize from the outside world instead of living with inside. Because anytime you're doing something that's high in your value and you get criticism for standing out, you're inspired by what you do and you're able to have resilience. But anytime you're doing lower priority things by fitting in, your own self-depreciation will be there 24 hours a day. And the little minor little micro bullies on the outside are actually your friends trying to get you out of that prison and get you out into something that inspires you. So you're not going to get away from it. And the people that finally realize that are the ones that are grateful for their life. They have much to be grateful for. But people that have a fantasy of trying to get rid of the half of a magnet, the negative part of the magnet, and try to get only the positive pole of the magnet, those are the people, the most ungrateful people. I gave up happiness. It may be too sad. The joy of depression, I call it. Because people are addicted to happiness and always wanting peace and kind. One-sided realities are the most depressed people that I've seen. The people that can embrace both sides of life are the ones that are most grateful. When you're grateful for what you got, you get more to be grateful for. That's why living by your highest values, where you're most resilient and objective, where you embrace both sides, and you can be grateful because you're doing what you love and you're basically living by priority and having discipline, reliability, and focus, and waking up leadership. These are the people that have the most gratitude in life and achieve more, because gratitude is another name for appreciation, and you appreciate and value in the marketplace.
Thank you, Dr. DeMartini. Certainly knowing your values and then matching what the market is needing with what you're inspired to provide is the first place to start. If you found this session valuable and you'd love to continue to learn from Dr. DeMartini, please click the subscribe button so that you're notified when we add the next episode. We'd also love to invite you to join us on Dr. DeMartini's Stay Inspired Facebook group, which you can access by linking to demartini.inc/inspired. We'll also include the link in the show notes. It's an inspired community of like-minded people from all over the world with a common value on empowering their lives. You'll have access to Dr. John DeMartini and many of his education pieces that will keep you inspired. Our goal in this community is to help you stay focused on your vision and to keep on expanding your life throughout the global pandemic. So come and join us as soon as you can on demartini.inc/inspired. Well, that's it for this episode. We look forward to sharing more wisdom and inspiration from Dr. DeMartini shortly. Until next time, keep looking for the many blessings, because the more you find, the more inspired you'll feel regardless of what's going on in your outer world.